Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. What you're about to hear is part one of my two-part interview with the great Joe Colley, good friend. We get into a wide-ranging discussion on all things Bulls in part one, get a little bit more into other topics in part two, including the NFL, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Chicago Bears, etc. Before we do get into part one, I did want to have a quick comment on these four preseason games so far. Two clear MVPs for the Bulls in these four games, Mattis Buzelis and Io, both have been absolutely fantastic. Mattis putting up just over 17 points in 23 minutes, his shooting metrics, 56, 39, 87, everything we've hoped for. Confident, active, electric, blocking shots, providing rim protection. He's been awesome. Io's been right there too. He's shooting 61, 36, 100% from the free throw line, averaging 15 points in 23 minutes. Both guys have been awesome. MVPs, clearly, so far this preseason. But let's all take a deep breath because it is preseason. Four preseason games, and once again, some members of Bulls Nation might be losing their collective mind. I'm already seeing people burying Isaac Okoro after a rough start. No doubt it hasn't been good. He's 20% from three. Almost all these shots have been wide open. But let's not forget, he shot 37% from three last season, 2 years ago, 39%. Are we really going to call him a bust after four preseason games? How long has he been playing with these guys? Like a month? The same goes for De'Lon Terry, who's, you know, struggling. I think he's shooting 20% from three, somewhere around that, 35% overall. Both of these guys play hard. I believe they'll both contribute. If you want to start Io over Okoro, I get it. I still think Okoro's the better point of attack defender. He's stronger. He's more versatile. And that's something the starting lineup desperately needs. The defense so far has been atrocious. And I'm not really sure how you fix it until you get a better answer at the center position. But right now, you know, only one guy looks like a real defensive anchor on the perimeter, or two guys, and that's Io and Okoro. I think Modest has massive defensive upside, especially as a rim protector, but he's still 21. He's still a bit too light to dominate on ball as a defender. I think he'll get there. Patrick Williams has been pretty good so far in the preseason relative to his previous performances. But, you know, I still have zero confidence Patrick Williams over the course of the year. Just put him in the role of role player. Hit threes, play good one-on-one defense. That's all you should expect out of Patrick Williams. Don't put him in the starting lineup against the better competition. Let him continue to build his confidence off the bench. That's where he should be. The starters, it's either got to be Io or it's got to be Okoro. I still think Okoro would be the better answer as a starter. More versatile, especially good against the smaller guards, as he proved, as he basically shut down Donovan Mitchell in the first two games. And anytime Mitchell scored, it was in a transition situation where Okoro wasn't on him. But I know we've already ignored that, and let's forget about that as we just focus on his poor shooting so far. Fair enough. He'll be better. Guaranteed. One thing, though, is crystal clear for me. This team needs Coby White. He's the only guy with real gravity, the only one who can consistently get a bucket when everything else fails. That's been the biggest offensive issue so far. When you got Vooch, who was pretty solid as a stretch five last year, shooting 11% from three so far in preseason, nobody's guarding him out there. You need Coby White on the floor because at 30 feet out, 35 feet out, there's a defender assigned to him. And he changes everything for the offense. I think the offense is going to look significantly better with him starting. So here are my guarantees. Okoro is going to get a lot better, significantly better. Two, De'Lon Terry will be better. And three, I don't see Patrick Williams continuing this level of play in the regular season. Those are my three guarantees. Once Kobe's back, fully integrated, this team will look different, better. I still have a large degree of concern about the defense. I mean, right now it looks awful, and I don't think you can fix it. You just need a stud at the center position on defense. I think Zach Collins is probably going to be a nice stopgap until we find that guy, but that's what's really, really missing. So anyhow, that's where we stand after four preseason games. Up next, I hope you enjoy this interview with Joe Colley of the Chicago Sun-Times, part one of the conversation. Hopefully Doug and I will be back together soon to wrap up our final preseason thoughts before the real games begin next week. Until then, be patient, stay positive, and as always, go Bulls.
Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the the convo, so ride with us.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Illinois. I look over to my right, and lo and behold, it's the legendary Sun-Times reporter, Joe Cowley, good friend of mine. How you doing, Joe? It's awesome to talk to you, buddy.
What's up, buddy? How you been?
I've been doing absolutely fantastic, and I am beyond excited about the beloved Bull and this year that I think is going to be a big step forward. So let's get started with this question. I think you'd agree, for you, your best case scenario is the Bulls are terrible this year. They're getting lottery one of those.
No, times. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Oh, really? Okay. What's your best case scenario?
That they're good. Everybody's reading me. And yeah, that's always the best case scenario. I think people are misguided where my mindset is. It is better. The best scenario for the paper right now and for our Cubs writer is the Cubs winning on Saturday. The best scenario for me and our paper are the Bulls making a championship run. But I can't paint a picture of unicorns and rainbows that isn't true along that journey. And unfortunately, you have a front office and a group that, to me, does not understand how to build a championship team. So that's kind of the struggle. I mean, along the way, I'm going to be very critical of them and I'm going to ask them tough questions. But I don't think there's any journalist that has any kind of sense of the newspaper industry and the trouble it's in to want a team to do poorly that it's covering, because it doesn't benefit them or it doesn't benefit their paper in the long-term future.
I agree. What's your best case scenario for this team? Like, what do you think realistically they could finish if everything goes well?
I think if everything goes well and the East plays out like I think it is, without any unforeseen major injuries, I think it's Cleveland, Orlando, New York, Detroit are in that four tier. The Bulls are not in that tier. And then to me, they're fighting with Milwaukee, what becomes of Philadelphia in that roster, because if it's healthy, it's a really good roster. I just don't think it will ever be healthy. Atlanta,
the Heat.
Teams like that, the Heat. So I think best case scenarios, they're in that 5 to 6, but they're definitely in that second tier. And I think that's obtainable. Who knows what Indiana's going to be without Halliburton and Turner. I don't think they're going to be as good. But they got a hell of a coach. And then who knows what Boston is with. Is Brown such an elite player that he can carry it? Because now he's going to get his chance without having, Batman or Robin, however you want to view those two, next to him. So, those are the unknowns. But I don't see any reason why the Bulls, especially because Arturas puts so much emphasis on the regular season compared to some organizations, why the Bulls aren't in that 5, 6, 7, 8 battling and could very well not have to deal with the play-in this year. I would not be surprised if they're out of the play-in situation.
So let's assume they're 5th seed or 6th seed, right around 500 at the All-Star break, maybe a few games ahead of 500. Mm-hmm. And I think if that happens, Buzelis has taken a significant step. I mean, clearly a legit starting caliber power forward.
He's going to take a step. A significant step. Just put that, mark that down already.
I don't think he's going to be an All-Star this year. I think you'd concur, right?
I think he's got a lot of hype. He's got a lot of hype that you want going into an All-Star campaign. Put it that way.
Wow.
A lot of it is narrative driven when it comes to the All-Star. And when you see fantasy websites and when you see all the articles written about 5 breakout potential players this year, look at the list of guys he's in there with. And it's all guys that are on the cusp of All-Star. So I would not be shocked if he's in an All-Star argument, especially with some key injuries in the East to some significant positions. So
fair enough. That's a good point. But I think it's a little bit more realistic. He'll average 14, 18. He'll be a legit starting caliber power forward and producing these highlight plays, kind of generating buzz, but not an All-Star yet. Let's go to that scenario. The Bulls are a few games over 500.
Okay.
And the All-Star break comes. Milwaukee Bucks call us and offer Giannis for a package centered around Buzelis, picks, and salary filler. And that probably would require 3 first-rounders in addition to Buzelis and a couple swaps. Would you make that move with a core then of Giddy, Kobe, and Giannis?
is Giannis committing for X amount of years?
Yes.
In that scenario? I mean, I'd have to seriously think about it, just because playing at the pace that Billy wants to play and how Giannis would fit into that and then fit with the guys around him, I'd probably, and there aren't many guys I would come off of Puzelis for at this point, but Giannis might be one of those that does tickle the fancy. That's a tough one. I think he would fit what they need, because the defense would be instantly, I think Puzelis is going to be a really good defensive player, but he's not there yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it fits their front office mindset of go for it, or don't tank, don't break, everything is, you know, building forward. So I think it would definitely build it forward. Yeah, I mean, why not? Yeah, you need a elite superstar. You'd have probably a 2 to 3 year window. Yeah, I'd probably do it.
Do you feel a team with Kobe, Giddey, Giannis, and, you know, whoever at the three has a chance of winning, and Vooch, obviously, at center, has a chance of being a real contender and possibly getting out of the East?
Yes. I think it would be a really good series with the likes of Orlando and Cleveland because of physicality. But to me, it's not just the guys you name, because then I take into account the second unit, which I really like, Io, Trey Jones, guys like that, that I don't know if those other teams could flex that depth. Cleveland fully healthy when Strus is back, and now they got Lonzo. Mm-hmm. That would be interesting, but Orlando wouldn't have that depth. Detroit definitely wouldn't have that depth and the experience. New York would not have that depth, and plus the coaching's about to take a hit. So I would say, yeah, I think they could contend with Cleveland. It would be interesting. It'd be an interesting series. It'd be a hell of a series. I think they could definitely match up with it. Are you hearing something of that? I don't know.
I've been thinking about this a lot, because people are talking about the Knicks. I'm like, the Knicks don't have the picks. It's not going
to happen. No. The Knicks have no assets to give. I mean, you could Cat, Mikal Bridges, you could try whatever scenario you want. But Milwaukee needs the picks.
Correct.
And that's why you're talking about teams like Houston, Golden State. Could it be interesting, because they could offer picks and some immediate young players that are on the cusp. That's why the Kuminga deal was so huge for them, getting that done and not letting that qualifying offer come to play. So there are teams out there that fit the profile of what Milwaukee would want. I don't know if the Bulls necessarily would. But, yeah, I mean, if you're going to throw Modest and then you got to – you still match the money somehow. Yeah, you got to match
a bunch of picks.
You still got to match the money. So I don't even know if Essengay comes into play. You'd have to match the money.
Well, yeah. Well, you throw in Collins or Williams or Herter, one of those guys making 18, 18, 18, and you got to know here. It's an interesting question. More important to me is, do you think if the Bulls were offered that deal, would they take it?
I don't, Fred, it's a great question, because I often run scenarios in my head of what would make sense for this team. Like, to me, if Houston called and offered up, because I think the problem with the Bulls right now is that the timeline wave is off of, okay, Giddey's still young, but you just upped him for 4 years, but you're stuck with Patrick's deal, who now may be coming, may live in that doghouse where Javon Carter and Jalen Smith reside. Mm-hmm. And then you got six guys coming off contract, expiring deals. So you will have this freedom of money, but it still doesn't fit. And to me, what I would love to see is if a team does call and the Bulls wanted to be aggressive, like I've written, I would do the Reed Shepard, Tari Eason to Houston for Kobe White, because they need, with Van Vliet going down. And I would reset Booch, because I'm a Shepard guy. I know people
I love him
play
too.
AAU ball with him. Yeah. I think he is so untapped, and I've seen him play in Summer League, and I know what Summer League is, but at the same time, I think – I'm not saying he's as good as Kobe White, but I think there's a ceiling there that can just make you say, wow. And I'd love to see him be on the same kind of timeline as Modest, because then I think you're building something 1-2 that you kind of use as foundation pieces and build around that with all the free money coming. To me, that would be the deal that makes the most sense. Because I really hate giving up Modest in your scenario. I really do. That's how highly I think about this kid. I just think there's a it factor there that I haven't seen from a young Bulls player. Shit, this is year 13. I don't – like, Jimmy didn't have this. Jimmy was just kind of a quiet kid from Texas that first year. I don't think I've seen it.
And older.
I wasn't there. Yeah, I wasn't there when Derek, rookie year, so I didn't experience that. I'm sure that was, it's a whole different animal there. So I'd really hate giving him up, but I would think about, especially if Kobe, the number for Kobe is $40 million a year. I like Kobe. I've learned to really respect his work ethic because I think it's very Jimmy Butler-like, where he goes into an off season not looking to say, I'm a pretty good ball handler, I'm gonna keep working on my handles. It's, I need to fix my body because of physicality. I need to build my conditioning because of this and this. So he attacks his weaknesses, which I like, which a lot of guys don't do. They just, like Zach would go into the off season and Zach's like, yeah, I'm a really good 3-point shooter, but I want to be better. Well, there's some other things you could work on, bro. So that was always the problem I had with him. It's cover up your weaknesses as best you can. Kobe does that, but I would, that would, if there was an aggressive move out there, I would explore that one. But I just don't think this front office has that kind of wherewithal or mindset. I don't think that other teams are very receptive to their phone calls because there's been a lot of negativity about it as far as it's just hard to get Arturas to just give details of something about how he feels about a guy. Everything's just a secret. And this is just not with the media. This is with other executives that he's supposed to have these relationships with. I heard it's gotten a bit better in the last year and got better at the trade deadline last year, that he was more receptive and more talkative about things. But before that, it was like everything was a big damn secret. And you can't work in that NBA world like that, where everything is locked down and everything's a secret and teams can't get a feel of what you're willing to do and how you value your players. The modest Giannis thing, I'd probably do it, but it hurts my heart.
It's an interesting question because it all depends on how Modest develops this year. But suddenly the Bulls could have a guy that would be the I can't imagine many players in the NBA who would be on the trading block for Giannis at a city that he would be willing to go to as good as Modest Bouzelis at that age. There's very few. So I'm pretty excited about Modest too, and I'm not sure I would do it just for that reason because I agree with you on the timeline issue. And suddenly you got a 31-year-old who you're a whole completely different
Right.
team. You got to win now. And
Right.
it's
And
an
I don't know
interesting
if this
question.
front office, I don't think this front office, they say it, but I, look, they keep getting secret extensions. They keep dragging this thing along. I just don't know if they're prepared to win that or would know exactly the final pieces to put into place to do that. Because they haven't proven that. So,
I agree with you. Modest saved their job, and they're going to keep with him. They wouldn't trade him for even Giannis, which I don't know. It's a tough question, but I would do it. All right, I did want to go. You mentioned Kobe, and you correctly always mention this that the Bulls need to find that guy. Why do you feel that Kobe, at 25 years old, does not have the potential to be that guy?
He's missing the defensive aspect of it, and he's missing the consistency of it, and especially at a high level where I haven't seen, and again, we haven't seen enough playoff experience. I just know this. I thought he was really on a right track last year, and I'm like, okay. Then we get to that play-in game, and that thing was so damaging in my eyes because Tyler Hero freaking took him and Giddy apart. Took them both apart. And it didn't matter who was on him, whether it was Kobe or whether it was Giddy. He took their good month of basketball and he shoved it up both their asses in one quarter. And I can't unsee that because I had so much like, okay, they got Miami solved. And it wasn't just Tyler Hero, but Spoelstra's game plan was just, that was the first time that I've always said I thought Billy Donovan was a second tier coach. He's out of that top elite. That's when you saw it and felt it that he is a second tier coach. He's not in that upper elite because Spoelstra, whatever, played possum in the earlier game from a couple weeks earlier in the regular season, however you want to frame it, whatever it was, Spoelstra had a game plan building for that game and unleashed it. And I thought Kobe and Giddy were exposed on so many levels, and so was Billy Donovan, and there was no answer for it. So right there tells me that Tyler Hero, who's an all-star, I don't think he's a perennial all-star, but he was an all-star last year, took arguably your two best players in the month of March and made them look JV. And I can't unsee that because that was your big stage.
Fair point, but Spoelstra's whole game plan was we're going to stop Kobe White. They put Mitchell on him, who's their best perimeter defender,
Well,
and they had Bam waiting for him everywhere. So I mean, there was a
but
certain
guess what? If you're going to be an all-star player, guess what the game plan is every night? We're going to
yes,
stop you.
That's a fair point.
You have
but
to be,
it's
and you have
game.
To be better than that. But it was the game. It was the game.
And he had 40 points against Atlanta in the game 2 years ago or whatever. Maybe it's three now. I'm losing track when these
okay,
happen.
But again, he wasn't the focus of the game plan. So.
I just feel like we've been putting a ceiling on this guy every year.
I was guilty of that until 2 years ago. And that's why I thought, okay, I think these dudes are going to get out of this first round. And I was shocked that they lost to Miami in the play-in game. I was shocked.
Like that.
And,
I wasn't shocked they lost.
And I was shocked they lost. And then I was doubly shocked that the two guys that had gained my confidence, even though I kept warning people, whether it was an article or Twitter, that don't put too much stock in March basketball because it's basically like September baseball with call-ups and shit. You just can't put too much into it because you had teams that are either in tank mode. They're completely sold. They're past the trade deadline. They know what they are. They're tanking. Or you had teams that were looking to rest guys or position themselves for playoff spots. So it's just a real tricky time to navigate and say, oh, yeah, I'm getting a real good read of our team. And unfortunately, the vice president of basketball operations came beating his chest once again a couple of weeks ago on Media Day, talking about his 15-5 record the last 20 games of the regular season, completely ignoring the fact that, yes, you got into the play-in, and then you were completely exposed as frauds. So
yeah.
Until Kobe shows me that not only is the opposing game plan focused on him, and it's against really good talent and a really good defender that's going to be on focused on him, and he can rise above that and do it at a high stage, then I just think right as of right now, he remains a fringe all-star. I'm not saying he can't be an all-star because of no Halliburton this year and you know however the voting goes, but as of right now, you're a fringe all-star.
Who's your fifth starter right now? I mean, as you probably may already know, I'm really high on Okoro. I love his defensive tenacity.
Huge Okoro guy. Huge Okoro.
Good. So you would agree he's the answer.
Oh, 100%. I know. That's why I asked Billy on Media Day. I go, I don't know you're going to come out and name the starter, but the Kevin Herter thing was with Giddy and Kobe and Vooch and Modest was nice. It was 7-1 in the 8 games they played together. But I said, you don't really think that's sustainable over an NBA season not to have a wing defender. And he won't come out and say it, but he showed his hand in the first two games against Cleveland that Okoro is the starter and that Herter will be part of that second unit and add some shooting to that second unit without question. And, yeah, it's Modest, Vooch, Isaac, Kobe, and Giddy. I think that's 100% the starting lineup. If it's not, I would be somewhat surprised because I just think they know they have to be better defensively. And Isaac Okoro is everything that they pretend Patrick Williams is. I know the defensive analytics always tend to favor Patrick, but I'm somewhat into analytics, but maybe 20%. I'm a big eye test guy.
Yes.
The eye test tells me Patrick Williams is not the defender they claim he is.
100% agree. He doesn't navigate screens like Okoro does, and you can't measure that.
No,
it's not measured.
He just moves. He just moves like Frankenstein-y, and he's not quick twitch, and he's physical because of his body, but he's not using his body to be physical. You know what I mean? There's a difference.
Yes.
Where I think Okoro is, first of all, I don't think he's the 3-point shooter that Patrick is, but he's a knockdown corner three guy. And you give me that guy and an elite defender, I'm fine with that. I'll figure out a way offensively and defensively.
And he plays harder. Just
plays harder.
He runs
plays
hard.
With more energy. And you know what? He's a great, great human being. Unbelievable. So a guy I grew up with, he and his daughter and son are going to be on the podcast next week. Dwayne Sheldon, J.C. Sheldon, Ohio State point guard. And now she was fifth overall pick in the Caitlin Clark draft. She and Okoro were signed by Holo Shoes to be the faces of their new shoe company. And so JC got to know Isaac and Dwayne got to know Isaac this summer and just raved about just what a fantastic human he is. And then just talking to some of the Cleveland guys the other day, they were like, I mean, great parents, great person, gets it. I think it was a great trade for both teams. I had a chance to talk to Lonzo about this last night because everybody wants to know who won the trade. And sometimes just both teams win the trade. And that's okay. So I thought it was a great NBA trade for both teams because Cleveland's in a whole different place. than where the Bulls are. They need a guy ready for the end of the season to make sure what happened last playoff run doesn't happen. And Lonzo's the adult in the room that can do that. Okoro, the Bulls need a guy for the regular season who's available all the time, doesn't have restrictions, can play back-to-back, and that's Isaac Okoro. So I thought it was a great basketball trade for both teams that they'll both benefit from.
I love how he guards down. Like, I think he's best against, like, Trae Young, Brunson. He guards, like, Dame when he was healthy. He guards
I love
guards
when he's on,
really
I love
well.
When he's on ones and twos. Because he's got great feet.
You saw it already with Mitchell in these first two games. Like, Mitchell did nothing when Isaac was on him. The only time they scored is when in transition and you got Giddy picking him up and they're, you know, picking and rolling with Vooch. I think it was a great trade. So I'm glad to hear you agree with me on that. And, you know, Lonzo, I think the story is way better than reality, though, Joe. I mean, he shot 36% last year. It's great that he came back. He's not the same player he was.
Yeah, but when he's on the floor, he just does so many. It's like Trey Jones. Mm-hmm. Trey Jones, also to me, is the sneaky free agent signing for the Bulls. You know, Okoro's a trade, so I'm not going to put him in that same category. He's just an adult. He's a professional, game-winning adult in the room. Mm-hmm. And when Kobe is kind of going skittish or Josh might get skittish, Billy can just turn to Trey and say, fix this shit. Go out there and fix this shit. And he does. And that's what I love about him. And again, that's why I go to – when I had Trey on the podcast last year, one of the things we talked about. Right now, you can say what you want about Chicago basketball. Minneapolis basketball has better players out of it right now than Chicago the last decade. And that's because AD is beyond that decade. Now, when you factor in AD, then the argument ends. But the last 10 years, Suggs, the Jones boys, Chet Holmgren, Sims is the fifth out of Minnesota. You start naming your five Chicago guys, and it was funny because we had this big debate in the locker room after Trey Jones appeared on a podcast. You had some angry Chicago guys like Io, and Io's bitching and saying, yo, Chicago, what about this and this? And I'm like, oh, okay, name the five guys. And so he started naming guys, and they weren't very impressive. And then he said, well, Modest. And then Vooch out of nowhere goes, Modest is in Chicago. And so everybody looked at Modest and they're like, Modest, what are you? Are you consider yourself a Euro or Chicago? And he was like, he just didn't want to get into it. He's like, I don't know. I'm not saying anything. Probably Euro, but I'm not saying anything.
Well, I don't think he's considered Chicago because he played in the Burbs. That's why. I think that's what they were getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love Trey Jones. To me, does everything. He doesn't defend with like Lonzo does, because Lonzo's IQ is so good, he's got that Alex Caruso anticipate what you're going to do before you do it on defense.
Yeah.
But he's really good on just fixing your problems. Oh, you need a point? I'll go get you a point. You need me to put guys in the right position? I'll put guys in the right position. So I'm a big Trey Jones guy. I think was a great, great free agent bring on. Wade, probably Javon Carter and Jalen Smith are your other comparisons. I think they finally got one right.
He's a true point guard, which is rare these days. I love him, too. I want to run through really quick a list of players who are not under contract for next year on this current roster. I'd like you to say yes or no in a sentence or two commentary, in your opinion, if this player will be back. So if it's greater than 50% in your eyes, just explain that and then
right.
Or no. Vooch.
No, we won't be back.
Zach Collins.
Mm-hmm.
I like Zach Collins a lot. Joe, he's a good defender. Team's
well,
he's a
good mannequin until they get to the draft and they actually try getting big. And he's also, you know, you could kind of keep a guy I don't know if Noah's done growing, and I don't think he could be a center because of his build, but I definitely think he could be a five when you go with a smaller lineup.
No.
And I think I talked to people about that this summer, and they've said, you know, that's the thing. He's only 18, so we don't know what his body's going to look like in 3-4 years. But Collins, yeah, I mean, again, give me I'd have to hear the price tag, but yeah, I wouldn't mind if he's back.
I hope he's signed for the mid-level like exception, somewhere around there. I would guess maybe even lower. He's a backup center right now. I mean, I can't imagine him signing. He's not going to make $18 million. Just put it that way, which he is now.
No, and I think if they promised him some things like you're our starter, I think that would give him, because there aren't a lot of starting center jobs elsewhere. And if he wants to be a starter, this might end up being his best place. So I'm sure that could go into the negotiation.
Kevin Huerter.
I like Herder. He's just got a little attitude to him. And again, price, you got to give me the price tag on him. What's the price
he's
tag?
He's 17.9 now. I would say $10 million a year he's probably worth.
Yeah, he's not going to get that now because he was a different guy when he got that money. I would think about him. Yeah, I would think about Herder. I like him. He's got a little attitude. And if you want to keep that second unit deep, I mean, he's a guy that definitely stretches that out.
Coby White.
You got to give me the price tag on him.
$30
million. Are we 30?
35 oh, 30,
million. Yes. Now we start getting into a 30. Yes. 35. You got. I got to sleep on it. 40. Coby, we love everything you did. Thank you, but we're not doing that.
I think that's the range. It's a fair. Unless he makes an All-Star team. Makes an All-Star team, he's going to make 40.
Well, then again, this is just based on the information I have right now of what he is. If he's an All-Star guy, and he's 25 a night. Then guess what? He bet on himself and he won because he's 40. Whether the Bulls are going to give it to him or someone else,
yeah.
I think if the season goes like I think it is, and the season goes like the Bulls and Coby thinks it's going to go like, I think both sides. And I wrote this the other day. Both sides want to get a deal done this summer. They want to keep him here. That's how much they like him.
So. Good. I love him too. He's a good leader. You see that, right? You see how he is in the locker room. He works hard. Do you feel that way? He's a leader.
I think he's turned into a leader. I think he's got a good voice. I wouldn't say
who's the leader. Of the
like
team?
When I compare, it's kind of like. But here's the thing: you know who the sneaky leader is? Is Io. I think Io is kind of the sneaky leader. But I think it's more of a committee with this group, and I think it fits this group perfectly to have a committee. Where I thought when DeMar was there, DeMar was the leader. DeMar walked in from day one, and basically. Made sure Zach understood, you think you're a leader, I'm a real leader, and this is how a leader leads. And I think it helped Zach. I think Zach became better at it because of DeMar. I thought he became a better leader, a better presence in the locker room, a little more unselfish with his time towards guys.
Yeah.
But I think that was because of DeMar.
Well, Javon Carter is gone, right?
No, he's gone.
Dalen Terry.
You know what? I don't know what it is, but there's something there. If you're going to be a deep team – like Indiana, and you've got a 6'7" guy that can handle the ball and defend and has some attitude.
Plays
I mean,
hard.
You can get you plays hard. You're going to get him on the cheap. So yeah, I'd keep Dalen Terry.
And then Julian Phillips has a team option. What about Julian Phillips?
Yeah, I don't know about Julian Phillips. I think he's kind of gone backwards a little bit, and I don't know if it's because I don't know. I would rather have, to be honest, I'd rather have Dalen Terry than Julian Phillips.
I'd agree.
Because I think Julian Phillips has gone a little bit backwards, and I don't know if it's because there's just more tape on him, but he doesn't really do enough to – I think Dalen Terry does what Julian does, but has a little more attitude, a little more swagger to him, and is a better ball handler. So I would probably pass on Julian Phillips. He could change my mind. He might change my mind. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a good athlete.
He might change my mind.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I've never been more simpatico with you in any show. We've been talking for years. I am nodding my head
finally,
everything you're
saying. You're
finally
using common sense. That's why. You finally understand common sense.